Y'all better put him in the Heisman.
Got that award right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, for those anytime easy drinking occasion.
Guys, I've been listening to y'all since this show aired.
Just wanted to tell Ty, I appreciate how much you know about the Razorbacks. I mean, you're very knowledgeable for as young as you are.
There are people that have saved up all year and done whatever it took just to get a ticket, just to get a glimpse at the Razorbacks.
Got my keg in the freezer. We're ready to get this thing rolling and go home, baby.
All the drills that we've done on defending the three, we've done those drills. Obviously, my message or my coaching is not getting through on defending the three ball because we saw, you know, last year us leading the nation in it. We have a lot of guys that are reluctant to guard the three-point line because they're worried about getting blown by off the dribble because of lack of lateral quickness. So a lot of areas that, like I said, we've got to get better at and improve on.
Seen a lot of hot takes on social media concerning this Arkansas basketball team, and that's sets up perfectly because it is a hot take Monday this morning brought to you by Wheels RV. We got to talk about this Arkansas basketball team and what has happened as of late. Mason Jones, Isaiah Joe, Daniel Gafford had some really good games lately. Want to discuss their improved performance. Mason had a career high for the Houston Rockets that we'll get into. Had a reffing experience this weekend, this Saturday, that was quite fun, quite enjoyable. Quite enlightening. We'll talk about that. Some NFL games over the weekend, divisional rounds. Some games were close, some games not so much. That will be on the conversation as well as it is Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and we will touch on that topic as well. So as we do every start of the show this morning, Tommy, where would you like to go?
I love this little Monday. I love this little feature that you've added every day where you lay out four or five bullet points, and I get to choose. And as much as I love to start with your reffing, because I did come and watch a game this weekend. Apparently, I picked the wrong game.
Did pick the wrong game
to watch. I watched one entire game, and it was not the one I should have been at. I think we need to start with the Arkansas basketball game. Yeah. What a disappointment. Again, I mean, I didn't expect Arkansas to go and win. I didn't expect Arkansas to go 2-0 this week. I honestly thought it would be a stretch to go 1-1 against these two teams, the LSU and Bama. But I didn't expect your tail end to be up between your shoulder blades by the end of the week either. And that's pretty much what you had is two games where you didn't compete. It wasn't like a bounce back where you went to Tennessee and gave yourself a chance to win a few weeks ago following Missouri. This was a whole different deal. And now the heat and the questions and the concern, or however you want to label the response from the fan base, is certainly there, wondering what is going on with this team right now and this program, its head coach, its players, and how they're not performing in the wake of two pretty concerning losses.
I would put this team's performances and the problems associated with those performances in a couple of categories. I think point guard plays one. Jalen Tate's got to stop turning the ball over.
Yep.
Two,
yep.
Missed layup after missed layup after missed layup.
Yep.
Those are really two of the most prevalent ones.
11 of 26 underneath the basket, yeah. Saturday.
And then you're not defending the three-point line last year. Eric Musselman touched on that, as you heard in the top of our open. This was the number one team in defending beyond the arc last year. And now that's just simply not the case. Alabama hits 15 threes in Saturday afternoon's basketball game. And you think about John Petty, who's the all-time leader in that category for the Crimson Tide. You think about Shackelford. You think about some of the other versatile players that they have on their roster that were filling it up. Arkansas just wasn't able to get out and defend the three-point line. And that hasn't just been a one-game issue. It's happened multiple times already this season.
So let's start with the point guard, because you bring that up. I think that's a great place to start, because Tate had, what, six turnovers in the ball game. I've got the box score over here, but I don't have it right in front of me. Well, he was six turnovers. Way too many turnovers from that spot. I don't know.
Must did say two weren't his fault, but still that's four.
Okay, but, this is an issue. You probably have a better feel about what should happen next, whether Desi moves over into that spot, who else could run the point. Moses Moody, what gets lost in all this is Moses had a great, career high day with points. What do you do? Where do you evolve? Where do you go with the point guard spot? Because turnovers cannot be a game in, game out issue that you can't just work around this. I mean, one, two, three, you're gonna have some mistakes out of aggression, out of trying to make a pass that comes off a fingertip, goes out of bounds. Things like this are going to happen, but those have to be a limited number, two or three, I would think. When you get above five, you've got a real issue in the ball game, real issue with your personnel.
In my opinion, Jalen should move off ball, and they should either put Desi, okay, who has been horrendous shooting the ball as of late, and that's a way to him still impact the game without necessarily shooting as much, or they put Devo in that spot.
Okay.
JD is a shoot-first guard. He's not going to spread the ball out, and we've seen that already. There's been very rare occurrences when you're like, JD has been just pass-happy and spread the ball out. You just hadn't seen that. So those are the only two. I don't know who else would you put in that spot. I just know from what I've seen this season, yes, Jalen Tate had some really good games against non-conference opponents that don't stack up against who you're playing in conference. He dribbles the ball too high. He doesn't have the best handles, and he just makes careless mistakes. And they're not all on him. As I mentioned, Eric Musselman said he didn't even have to watch the film. Two of those turnovers were not Jalen's fault. But still, it seems like that more often than not, he's the one that's turning the ball over situations. Now, as the point guard, you're going to have more turnovers than any other position player on the team.
Well, you handle it more.
It's just one of those things that I don't think he's cut out to be a point guard in the SEC. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just over-exaggerating on the games as of late. That's just what has happened in my eyes lately.
If you're going to have that many, maybe this is just an old-school take. If you're going to have six turnovers, you better have more assist, right? He had three.
Oh, that's not old school. That's just a take.
If you're going to have six turnovers, you better have a few more assists to go along. He had three assists to go along with that, because the old assist to turnover ratio, six turnovers, three assists in the ball game for Jalen Tate. So team had eight assists total to 18 team turnovers in the ball game. So 18 and eight, not going to work there. But this was a ball game that honestly, not very long in, Arkansas, it was pretty clear what the handwriting was on the wall again on Saturday, much like in the middle of the week against LSU, how this ball game was going to go.
What's your opinion on this Razorback basketball team? You can text or call in at 877-377-6963 on Hot Take Monday here on the Morning Rush. Mike in Murfreesboro text in. He says, just look at the assists the last two games. They're playing hog ball, not Arkansas ball. The betterment to share the ball is a much better value, or it's going to be a long year. Yeah, Mike, you bring up a good point. And also, when they do make a good pass and they find a guy cutting to the basket, they just haven't been able to finish near the rim. And I don't know what that is. Now, Thursday's practice, Eric Musselman had them in weighted vests and defensive drills and other drills to try to make him tougher and stuff. I don't know how much that impacted their legs in the game on Saturday, but this team, anytime they go to the rim, it seems like they just don't have the toughness factor that's needed to score in the paint in the Southeastern Conference, especially when you play teams like Alabama, who's number one in the SEC right now, like a Missouri, like a Tennessee, and like some of the better teams in the Southeastern Conference, including LSU. It has been awful as of late. Now, that's not to say it can change. I hope no one's jumping off the must bust this season or anything like that, but I know people are getting frustrated. And listen, you're valid. Here's what it comes back to. You shouldn't be losing by 31 to Alabama in basketball. I don't care who the coach is. Nate Oates is a good coach. At the end of the day, you as the Arkansas basketball program should not be losing by 31 to Alabama in basketball. Football, understandable. Basketball, no. Not there. There's no excuse for that at all.
I want to tell you about the new Michelob Ultra Organic Seltzers. They come in spicy pineapple, cucumber lime, and peach pear. They're light and refreshing and are made with zero sugar. The new Michelob Ultra Organic Seltzers.
Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
Plenty of blame to be passed around. Eric Musselman's accepted that he has to do a better job coaching. The players need to accept that their performance to this point in SEC play has not been anywhere close what's been expected or what should be expected. This is one of those things. There's again, parties. There's no unblemished party in this situation. It's frustrating. I 100% get that. I wasn't planning on being angry on Saturday because I had some fun in the morning reffing. And then I'm thinking, oh, Arkansas basketball, I don't think they're going to win, but they're at least going to compete. They didn't even compete on Saturday. Yeah. And it's a different occurrence. It seems like every single game, something you got to look to. And here's the deal. You get Auburn on Wednesday. Tommy, Auburn just beat Kentucky on Saturday.
Auburn's a different team. They found him a point guard. Different team than the one you beat to open conference play.
So his name's Sharif Cooper, I think.
Back December the 30th. So don't expect just because you took care of Auburn, you know, 3 weeks ago or whatever it'll be now, that you're going to roll over these guys. Not the case. Auburn, Vanderbilt, Ole Miss coming up before you step out for that Oklahoma State game. Three winnable games, but you got to go win them. So you got a chance to kind of get right. Three games I think you can win. You know, right now your record's 2-4 in conference play. You win these three and get yourself to 5-4. But the trick is you got to actually go win them. These are three games I believe you can do it. So Auburn at home, of course, Vanderbilt on the road, Ole Miss at home. I think those are three games you got a good chance because of where they're at to go win the ball games. But again, got to go win them.
Sean from Lafayette texting. He says, my league prediction of 500 in league play is a little more appreciable. I just knew this team wasn't as good as we were made out to believe. They haven't meshed, and they're playing like one. So that's something that I think a lot of fans agree with right now, is this team has not clicked and connected in conference play like they thought they would. Kyle from Greenwood texting. He brings up that Auburn's a really good three-point shooting team. Well, you just played one in Alabama. You just played Alabama's all-time leader in that category in John Petty. It's not going to get any easier when you play the Auburn Tigers this weekend, especially coming off a loss to the Razorbacks earlier this year. So you know Bruce is going to have those guys fired up for Wednesday's matchup. Back to the phone lines, 877-377-6963. Let's go out to Russellville home and welcome in Danny. Danny, you're on the Morning Rush, buddy.
Good morning, guys. The first game against Auburn, we gave up a lot of three-point shots, but we made a lot of shots in that game. Just kept staying ahead of them. If we come out against Auburn in this game and score 5 points the first 10 minutes, we'll get beat by 30 again. I mean, you're not going to beat any team scoring 15, 16 points and a half or 5 points in the first 10 minutes. And that's what we did against LSU and against Alabama. Now, Alabama is very good. They're capable. They're a Final Four team. They can definitely do it. They can win it all. LSU can go to the Final Four. Actually, we got four teams in this conference that's capable of making deep runs, and we lost to every one of them. So I guess it's back to the drawing board. As far as missing all these layups, guys, they need to take a few lessons from the great Sidney Moncrief. You know, on the post-game show on The Buzz, they were all talking about how we're too skinny, we're too weak. Sidney Moncrief was not a physical specimen. He was a very smart basketball player, and we're just not. We're not at all. And when we go into the paint, we're not looking. We're looking to figure out a way to avoid contact, and that's why we're missing so many layups. Just go in and dunk it. And if they foul you and they block your shot, so what? Alabama took it right at us. I mean, and we fouled them because we had to. And if we didn't foul them, they made it, or they kicked out and made a three. They're just a very smart basketball team. Alabama's very good.
They do. They do have
you
a really
good
squad.
You guys have a good day.
Danny, you as well, buddy. You as well. Yeah, Alabama's got a really good squad, but as I referenced earlier, you shouldn't lose to Alabama by 30.
Nope.
So that at 31. That's the bummer Arkansas basketball news this morning, but I do have some positive news to share with you. Mason Jones gets his first start as a Houston Rocket, and this is kind of following the trade with James Harden and that whole fiasco. Well, Mason, he made the most in his first career start. He goes for 24 points.
Jones pulls, hits.
Oh, Mason jars one.
Modern NBA fans, the long two is the worst shot in the league.
Game tied at 60, though. Jones once again breaks the tie. Long way to go. That was a long three. Yes, that's a start. Jones draws the foul on Walker and one.
Mason hit 6 3-pointers against Greg Popovich in the San Antonio Spurs. It was awesome to see the former Razorback stand out and again his first career start. Isaiah Joe has played really well for the Philadelphia 76ers as of late. Daniel Gafford has been a force for the Chicago Bulls. So you at least have some former Razorbacks that are doing so well so far this in the NBA season.
Yeah, that's good news, particularly for a guy that went outside of the draft. I mean, you talk about Isaiah Joe, who obviously went in the second round, but for Mason, when you're trying to figure out, is he going to make it? Clearly, he's going to make it in the NBA, it appears. So this is very good news and a good early indication for his career.
And you can tell he'd been working tirelessly on several different aspects of his game. Well, Mace, it definitely paid off, buddy.
Yep.
Some Arkansas football news for you this morning. I saw this stat via Pro Football Focus. Treylon Burks has the second highest grade of all returning wide receivers in college football. Tommy, this is a guy that could very well end up on several All-American lists this upcoming season.
Yeah, I mean, we know he's got the hands. We know he's got the frame and the speed. So how will it work out? Who's going to throw him the ball? And how's that mesh going to be between him and his quarterback? That's the big question right now. We know whoever gets that role, and you'd feel like KJ Jefferson has the inside edge on that, has a great top-shelf wide receiver to throw it to.
So. Couple commits over the weekend. Preferred walk-ons, Jordan Hanna out of Powerhouse Greenwood. He had offers to Southern Miss, Arkansas State, Pitt State, Sam Pittman's alma mater, Central Missouri, Austin Peay, and Northwestern State. This is a guy that racked up almost 140 tackles, 13 sacks, and 11 TFLs last year for Greenwood. He is committed as a preferred walk-on.
Yeah, and he had preferred walk-on offers from several Power 5 programs in addition
Boston
to Arkansas.
Boston College, Colorado, name a few.
So he had kind of a fringe player just right there on the edge, similar to his brother's track. So like a lot of players from Greenwood, not maybe physically quite big enough, maybe goes like Grand Morgan did and starts as a walk-on and earn your way into a scholarship, wouldn't surprise me at all.
So he's one. The other guy is DeWitt's Logan Moss. Now, he's teammates with, and I would just forget his name, it's Dax Courtney is his name. It's the junior tight end that's going to be a senior next year. DeWitt's Logan Moss, he had 94 tackles this year, 14 TFLs, also had 4 forced fumbles as seniors. So you got a couple, I think he also plays linebacker, so you got a couple invited walk-on linebackers, Tommy.
Yeah, so position, clearly you need some help at and need to build some depth on that part of your roster. So a good place to probably invite some guys that you couldn't quite offer a scholarship to, but maybe through some development physically and in the weight room, maybe they can earn a scholarship somewhere down the road.
You also picked up Cade Renfro out of Ole Miss. He's going to be a walk-on here at the University of Arkansas. He's from the same school that Kendall Briles won a state championship at when his dad, Art, was the head coach, Stevensville High School in Texas. Jevin Sneed, the late Jevin Sneed, also went there. Jarrett Stidham, who played at both Baylor and Auburn, went there as well. And then Chad Morris, he was the head coach there. So there's a lot of connections college football-wise that went to Stephenville High School, Tommy.
Now, I mean, one of the powerhouses in Texas. We've heard all the stories at this point. So, I mean, obviously a name we're all very familiar with. It'd be, I guess, similar in modern days right now to a Bryan or a North Little Rock or a Bentonville here in our state. So.
Yep. All right, last headline for you this morning. It is Martin Luther King Jr. Day. What does this holiday, in essence, mean to you? I mean, it's two white guys. Let's just,
yeah, right. I mean,
let's just be honest about this. What does this holiday mean to you?
Well, I think our perspective, our perspective is a lot different than
the pigment of our skin.
Than some of our friends who are African American. I think to me, I've got several friends, and particularly my officiating friends that are African American. I see what it means to them, and that's what it means to me, is to know what it means to them and their family and their parents and the opportunities that we take for granted that weren't there 40 or 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I ever officiated a football game at Little Rock Central and drove by the front of that high school was pretty breathtaking or awe-inspiring to see that with your own eyes. You've seen the black and white images from the from the video and the news coverage. You've seen the pictures in history books or just reading about it. Man, have you ever been to Little Rock Central and seen that?
We went on a field trip there.
I would imagine you growing up there, you probably been there.
I've been there. I know at least once, maybe twice. A lot of professional athletes make their way. Like Kyrie Irving was there just a couple months ago. Like it's a place where a lot of people like to visit.
Yeah, you think about that, and then, if you go to Memphis and you see the National Civil Rights Museum and some of the things. I've been to the one in Atlanta as well. As someone who doesn't have the perspective, it certainly gives you some education to that. But for me, you ask, what does it mean to me? I think when you develop a network of friends and you as you get older and you broaden out your friends and your friend list and your network and you have friends that include those of color, you understand a little better. You have those conversations as you mature and get older, and you understand what it means to them. I think you just gain a perspective that you don't have at a younger age.
I think it's we're 20 years apart, so we have a little different perspective when it comes to this. So the guy that really kind of pushed me over the edge to get into this industry was Gus Johnson, and I'm listening to him talk on Fox Sports doing this interview with Mark Titus, who played at Ohio State, and Tate Frazier, who does college basketball media, and they're just asking him about the significance of Howard University, which is an HBCU, playing Notre Dame, hosting Notre Dame, not just playing Notre Dame, they're hosting Notre Dame.
Right.
And I've grown up in a home where I've at least been taught from the perspective not to see color or anything like that. And I think when you have someone that you look up to and you aspire to, while we're not exactly in the exact same part, he's doing play-by-play and that, I just appreciate hearing him talk about the significance of this holiday, the significance of just him growing up and the success he's had. That's the perspective I have, and I'm not going to pretend like the majority of my friends are black, but I do have a lot of friends that are African-American. So when something, I thought you made a good point earlier, when you see that how much this holiday means to them, then you want to also do what, like, be in that same camp and appreciate that in the same sense. We're never, again, it's just being brutally blunt honest, as two white guys, we're never going to fully understand what this holiday means from that perspective. But the goal of all this is to at least try and understand, and to your friends that are black, to just make the best of that. I think that's the best way we can articulate it this morning.
You know, as we get older and more comfortable in having these conversations, one of the things that I've really enjoyed this past year or two is the last 2 years, former Razorback Sparky Hamilton's been on my football officiating crew. Mm-hmm. We've had many a wonderful conversation, particularly this past year, when tensions about race and George Floyd and so many different things have happened in society and in life. And being able to pick the phone up, call him, riding in a car with him to a football game, whatever it is, you just gain a perspective, like you said, that it's hard to think you know when you don't know. And it's hard to know what you don't know either. And I just encourage you to, we probably all have someone in our life that we work with, we're friends with, and if you're not comfortable having those conversations, find a way to make that entrance into that conversation somehow. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to find out that friend of yours, if you're like me and Ty, and you've grown up here, and that conversation, you're white, and that conversation is uncomfortable, I think you're going to find out your friend, your coworker, in a lot more cases than not, is comfortable having, is going to be willing to have that conversation with you and want you to understand and see their perspective. Yeah. That's what I've learned this year.
And you bring up something that I've also done, like my buddy RJ Young, who now is writing and doing college football work for Fox Sports. I've called him, and I've called up some other friends, because that perspective is just you should want. You don't know, and by no means do you have to agree with everything they list politically, socially, whatever. That's I'm not what we're encouraging this morning, but just what I've tried to do since becoming and transitioning from a very private school bubble to the college life to the post-grad life is just to at least try and be better about understanding others' experiences and realize that as a straight Christian heterosexual white male that my experiences, my opinions are not the only ones out there. And that's kind of the best way I can put it for everyone this morning.
All right, we're brought to you this morning by United Welding Institute. We're wanting to talk to all the high school seniors here for just a minute. You're interested in competing in a welding competition to win a scholarship. This is a tuition waiver and all the supplies that you need. You need to pay attention because coming up at the end of February, they're going to have a great competition that could earn you at least $1,000 for competing in the competition and maybe as much as $10,000 for winning the competition. Again, this is on the last Friday of February. Tests are going to be performed in a variety of different areas of welding, from vertical T-joints to overhead T-joints to certified welding. Learn more by going to UnitedWeldingInstitute.com or give them a call at 479-968-3390. They're going to play out as much, like we said, as $10,000 for first place, down to $6,000 for second, $4,000, $2,000, and $1,000 for first place. Everyone that takes part in the competition gets a $1,000 scholarship waiver for United Welding Institute. Again, UnitedWeldingInstitute.com. That's UnitedWeldingInstitute.com or call 968-3390 or email them at info@UnitedWeldingInstitute.com.
I'm not going to lie, I'm pretty surprised that about 50 minutes into hour number one, we have not heard from David in South Arkansas. That being said, he either's going to be driving back from Kansas City this morning or he drove back yesterday, so he's probably quite tired. But that game between the Cleveland Browns and the Kansas City Chiefs yesterday was awesome.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Let's start with really what the play that a lot of people are discussing this morning, Rashard Higgins' fumble at the goal line.
Is a hit at the five to Higgins. He lost the football as he reached for the pylon, and they rule it a touchback as he fumbled through the end zone.
Well, this is going to be, I mean, whatever happens right here, Stefanski, livid. If this is a touchback, and it did look like it, Jim, this is devastating. What a throw. Movement with the eyes by the quarterback. Let's see right here.
Oh, that's the ball definitely came out early.
That play was devastating for Cleveland Browns fan because Sorensen led with the helmet, should have been the penalty, but just
needs to be reviewed. I don't know all the ins and outs of the review process for the NFL. In college, we do know, because Arkansas has been on the tough end of a review process where the booth can review targeting. That situation there, the official on the field has 0% chance, just about 0%. When that plays on the inside, you're worried about the goal line, the ball, touchback, touchdown, all of that. You got no chance of getting that helmet-to-helmet hit, in addition to everything else you're trying to officiate, one look, real speed, real time. That needs to be reviewable, and I don't know where else he could have gotten some help on that, but an impossible play for one person to get all of that.
I just know Browns fans were livid, and I
don't blame him because it was clearly a helmet-to-helmet hit.
You can, and he led with the crown of his helmet,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, no question.
Was it one of those things that if he would have dropped the flag, that's a reviewable play, but because there's no flag drop, they can't?
Right, but look at where he's standing versus where the hit occurred.
Oh, I'm not blaming
and
him
And I'm
for
just
that.
Saying that what I'm saying is the booth should be able to initiate that like it can in college. That's all I'm saying.
It's tough.
If I'm wrong on that, I'm wrong. But
I think you're right.
Based on what didn't occur yesterday, yeah, they clearly can't.
So the Chiefs. So that was an intriguing part.
It turned out to be a huge no call.
Oh, it was
huge no call.
Massive, because the Chiefs ended up winning that football game by 5. Let's fast forward to the end of the game. Here was Chad Henne with the throw that sealed it all.
A play. Henne rolling out, throws it. Hill! And the Chiefs are heading to the AFC Championship game. Only Andy Reid gets it shotgun on fourth and an inch.
I mean, you hear Tony Romo's reaction. Fourth and inches. Chad Henne escapes on, I think, a 3rd and 14 and comes up just short. He gets in shotgun, throws a little out hitch to Tyreek Hill. The game's over.
Yeah.
Unbelievable finish to a really fun football game. hopefully Patrick Mahomes, and I think all of us anticipate that he'll be ready for Buffalo next Sunday.
He's just going to draw him off sides here. There's no play coming up here. No play at all, Jim. And then he takes the rolled snap. Up.
I didn't think there was going to be a play.
No, I didn't either. I mean, no one thought. I mean, Romo was all... All in on the there ain't no play here, Jim.
Andy Reid, man, he's got some guts. You got to say that with the backup too. Not Patrick Mahomes, the backup quarterback.
If the throw's off, the catch is off, anything's off there. Ooh, curtains.
Could be. Try the new Bud Light Seltzer Lemonade. The taste of sweet lemonade meets the refreshment of a hard seltzer. Original black cherry, strawberry, and peach lemonade. The new Bud Light Seltzer Lemonade.
They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical, and he's been thrown out of the ball game.
Tom, and welcome in this morning on a Monday edition here on the Morning Rush. I think a lot of people have been frustrated venting here on this program the performance of the basketball team Saturday afternoon. So I think there's a lot of things that you can point to that have gone wrong these last couple of Southeastern Conference games. Is there something, in your opinion, that stands out in particular that they have to fix immediately in order to have a chance against Auburn?
Oh, gosh. Well, yeah, I mean, you could look at a lot of different things, but I want to say their three-point shooting defense is something that has got to get better quick, because Auburn's going to come in here, and they made 15 in the first game, too. So I think that's one of only three games that Eric Musselman teams have allowed 15 made three-pointers. Now, Alabama took, 35 or something? So, mm-hmm. I mean, they shot a ton, and Auburn shot a ton, too. But the addition of Sharif Cooper makes Auburn a different team than what Arkansas saw when they went and won there in the conference opener. But, man, there's so many things happening. Guys are slumping at the same time. I mean, we already knew Desi Sills was kind of a streaky shooter and prone to some extended slumps and then some hot streaks. But, you know, now Vance Jackson has joined him, had a few good games, and now, you know, now he's gone cold with his three-point shot. So, a lot of different things they've got to get better at for sure.
When you look at the addition of Justin Smith, you were expecting 3 to 6 weeks. He's back in 15 days. He played about 18 minutes in this basketball game. Tom, how many games do you think it's going to take for him to get acclimated and back to the Justin Smith that we saw early in the season?
Yeah, certainly a few, because, you know, the ankle – probably doesn't feel great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, good enough to play, but probably not at his best yet. Now, he did have a dunk, and if you might have seen my notes from the game, they went four consecutive games without a dunk. And then that just goes to show you how hard they're having to work offensively. They're not getting some break open pick and roll or a lob pass for a dunk. And they got one, and Tate, he backdoored his defender, and I think it was Jalen Tate who found him, and he got a dunk. So Arkansas needs to have a few more plays like that. And as Eric Musselman noted in his post game, a lot of their offense right now is coming from the half court, called sets and things like that, instead of what he had a term for it, open flow or something, the flow of the game. And in the Auburn game, the 97 points for Arkansas, that was what I called more freewheeling, a little bit more open court stuff, and they were phenomenal in that. So you can bet that Bruce Pearl is going to see what other teams have done defensively, trying to pinch down on Jalen Tate, not let him be as much of a creator, and Arkansas is going to have answers for that in this game.
Auburn, Vanderbilt, Ole Miss, the next three for Arkansas. Three winnable games, but the bottom line is you got to go win them to get right. You got a chance to get your record back to above 500 here.
Yeah,
Tom, can this team overcome what's happened in recent games mentally and win these three games? Because they're talented enough, but I don't know that they're capable of doing it right now with all the frustration that seems to have set in with this program.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great question. And, I mean, they've got to get players' confidence back, and you do that by making shots in games. And I mean, they've got to find ways for Connor Vanover to be productive. The guy's 7'3". He can be a great rim protector for you, and we know he can shoot the three. So I know that defensive matchups and lateral quickness has been an issue there for him. So maybe they can find a way to help him get going as well. But you're right. The Vandy game on the road now is going to be very dangerous because depending on what they do in their midweek game, and I'm not sure who they play, they could still be winless in league play, even though they put up some great efforts. And Auburn, you know, is going to be very eager to, you know, get back at them for the conference opening loss. And then Ole Miss, I mean, here's the thing. Arkansas beat Georgia by 30 points, the same Georgia team that in their previous game really had a shot and could have and should have beaten LSU on the road. So you can point to your guys and say, look, we blew this team out. Georgia went and won at Ole Miss. So it's just how you show up on a game-to-game basis. And with hopefully Justin Smith improving and Note getting better, they can find a way to push the right buttons and have more effective performances.
Let's go back and talk about the point guard position. Six turnovers from Jalen Tate, that's clearly an issue. Coach Musselman excused a couple of those, but still you're at, you know, four or so turnovers in the ball game. Too many for your point guard position. What are the options? Do you put Desi Seals there? Do you try to improve with Tate? What do you do if you're Eric Musselman and this staff when you're evaluating the point guard position and who handles the ball?
Yeah, that's a great question because everything flows from that. LSU, I thought, did a great job taking Arkansas out of some of the things they wanted to do with that three-quarter pressing that it took time off the clock, and it just didn't seem to me like Arkansas was in smooth offensive rhythm in that game, even though they did get some open looks. Note is the second guy, and clearly, because Eric Musselman points it out, his defensive play has got to get better. Because there are times to me, it seems, when Arkansas is struggling to score, that his first step and beating his guy and getting to the rim has been a good option. So those two guys have played the point, and Devontae Davis has played the point some. I don't know how comfortable they would feel for Desi to do that. With him being in a slump, maybe it's not the thing to do, but maybe you just shake things up and give him a few series at the point to see what that does for your offense. But the thing is, they've got to be able to get Tate clearer drives to the basket so he can draw defenders and dish.
Tom Murphy with us here on the Morning Rush. Tom, we got a text in from Roger. How would you grade this team's effort, energy, and enthusiasm lately in these last couple ball games?
Yeah, I asked Eric that question on post game on Bama. What are you seeing from your team from the body language standpoint? Because you want their heads to be in the game. You know, you don't want to see guys turning their backs in the huddle and things like that. And I didn't see any of that. But you do worry about, you know, that type of thing. So I think this next game is going to be a huge challenge. You know, can you get Vance Jackson back going again? Can Justin Smith give you more minutes and the type of rebounding you need from him? Here's the thing. He's trying to play 8, 9, 10 guys, and so he'll have options. Jalen Williams give you more minutes and better minutes like he had done in the previous games. So, I don't know. There is a lot of frustration. I went back and looked, though, at back-to-back losses of double figures, and under Mike Anderson, his last 4 years as a head coach, they had one set of games like that each of those 4 years. So it happens, and the last time it didn't happen was that team that finished second in the league. I believe it was the 14-15 team. So it happens, and it's how you respond to it that's going to be telling for the Razorbacks.
Tom, let's switch it up, talk a little NFL, as we had some great divisional games yesterday. The matchups are set. Brady, Rodgers in Lambeau, and then Josh Allen and hopefully Patrick Mahomes in Arrowhead. How excited are you for the quarterback games that we get to watch this weekend?
Yeah, that's all good stuff, and yeah, I really hope Patrick Mahomes can come back because now they're my de facto home team since my Falcons have been so pitiful. But, hey, look, shocker last night. The Saints turned the ball over four times in what looks, the reporting is, that will be Breeze's final game. it's doggone Tom Brady that just has a way in the postseason. And they didn't start very well, but they kept with their game plan, and they were able to run the ball. So the Bucs are going to be a force. Look, Green Bay has been a really good team. To me, somewhat under the radar, because I don't think they have a ton of superstars outside Rodgers on offense, but they're at home, and the Bucs are not used to playing in that type of weather. So I would favor them. And then, of course, the Chiefs, Bills, I'm happy that the Bills are playing well again, and they made some good moves with Sean McDermott, head coach, Josh Allen, coming along as a quarterback. That's going to be fantastic. It's the older guys in the NFC and the younger guys in the AFC.
In the game last night with Brady and Brees, you know, Brady comes away with a win, but and there was a lot of turnovers in that ball game and interceptions.
Mm-hmm.
Brady had at least two and maybe a third. One that was a trap ball and ruled incomplete. Another one where
Marshawn Lattimore should have picked it.
Didn't get down. Brady was easily just a hair away from two more interceptions himself. He'll have to clean up his play this week, Tom, in order to give his team a chance.
Yeah, he will. I mean, he's not the same Tom Brady as he has been for all those other playoff games and the miracle comeback against my Falcons a few years ago. But still, a heady dude and a great leader. And this team, man, the Bucs they're going to be formidable.
Yeah, but clearly a guy that because of his name, because of his presence, because of who he is, makes everyone else around him believe they can do it. That's the reason they're in the NFC Championship game.
Absolutely, the leadership there. And look, their defense played a really good game against the Saints team that, you know, has a lot of weapons.
Mm-hmm.
So that to me, that's the deal. The Bucs played really good defense, too.
No Taysom Hill for the Saints yesterday. I wonder how much of a role he would have played. Tom, before we let you go, you brought up your Falcons several times. They hire the Tennessee Titans offensive coordinator, Arthur Smith, who did a wonderful job with Tannehill, Henry, and those guys this year. Thoughts on the hire, man, before we let you go?
He did. I mean, not a super long track record, but I guess teams that you've seen the success of younger guys like McVay and McDermott and these offensive wonderkind guys are getting shots. And he's got the same first name as our owner, Arthur Blank. So maybe that played a role. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
They've just got to somehow inspire what's a good collection of offensive talent to have a better season next year, and we got to be better defensively. But, hey, that's a tough, tough division. I don't think the Saints are really going to go anywhere. They'll find an answer for Breeze, and they have a good collection of talent, and the Bucs are really solid. Yeah. And the Panthers are coming along. So the time will tell on Arthur Smith.
Yeah. Hey, let me ask you this on the way out the door, and then we'll let you go. Auburn, Vanderbilt, Ole Miss, this three-game stretch, will this determine whether or not Arkansas is going to make the tournament, how you perform in these three games? Because you don't do well here and you go 0-3, it seems like there's no way you're going to make the tournament. Seems like you got to go at least 2-1, maybe 3-0 to set yourself on the right course. What do you think about that take that maybe this three-game stretch is going to determine which way the season goes and perhaps whether or not you can make the tournament in March?
That's a strong take because think about it. If they lose some of these, then it's going to hurt your net. Right now their net held on because those were tough, tough road games. But if you lose one of these, then it starts dropping into that bubble range or perhaps even worse. So you really need to go 3-0. You need to get another road win at Vanderbilt because there are a lot tougher games down the road. And Kentucky's still to come, another return game against Bama, return game against LSU, and a road game at Missouri. There's still a lot of tough games.
Tom, we appreciate it, buddy. We'll let you go, and we'll talk recap Auburn and some other stuff coming up this Thursday, bud.
Sounds great. See y'all.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
A bright red Razorback caravan is headed to Nebraska, and this time, we're coming for the whole damn thing.
I do want to touch on the experience I had reffing this weekend. That was quite enlightening, I would use as a word to describe it.
Well, I came over and watched... You did, what, three or four games?
Five.
You ended up doing five. And that happens. I came and watched one of your games. Although I'll give him a game or two to get kind of get in the flow of things, and I'll slip in there and give him watch. Everything went fine for the game I watched. Apparently, after I left, things ratcheted up a little bit.
Well, here's what occurred. The game that you watched, because you watched one game, right?
Right.
Okay. The game that you watched was first and second graders is what I was told. Then after you left, there was one more first and second grade game, and then they moved to third and fourth.
So this was, for those that don't, that maybe weren't here, first time ever Ty volunteered to help at the Girls Club at Girls Inc. So his first time to ever put a whistle around his neck and go referee last Saturday.
I did.
Yeah. As a volunteer
and I
to help him out.
And I appreciate the ref shirt that you kept, that you gave me, I've kept just for... Yeah. For safekeeping, of course, and I still have that whistle. And they did ask me to come back, so that's good that I got asked to come back. But
they found him a pigeon.
When they upgraded the talent level and they moved that, the coaches were more intense, and there was a little animosity between the first game that I reffed between third and fourth between those coaches, and it was just very intense. It was a very low scoring affair. I do want to give special shout out to several Morning Rush listeners that made their way over that morning. Justin, who is a Texas A&M Aggie fan, he was wearing a Texas A&M mask when he walked over to me. He's like, "Hey man, I'm one of the Aggies you like to give a hard time with on the show." So appreciate Justin. Jeff was wearing a Dallas Cowboys mask, so he's kin with Jenkins over here. And then Jay from Alma also stopped by. So those three J's, which I thought was kind of funny, three Morning Rush listeners that names began with the letter J, all appreciated the work that was on display on Saturday.
The funniest thing that happened in the one game that I hung out for was there wasn't much going on in the games. I think the final score was 38-6 in a game of 4 or 5 minute quarters, and it was a running clock. So it kind of gives you an idea of what I witnessed there for 45 minutes or so. But there was a mom that was taking pictures. She had one of these high-dollar cameras with one of these telescopic lenses, and she was wandering her way around the floor, making sure that she got the most intense high-def photos of her baby girl. That's wonderful.
Did I get in the way?
But she didn't. No, no. She didn't appreciate, apparently, either it was the 2-3 zone or the 1-3-1 matchup, or apparently she didn't appreciate the way they were playing defense. So at halftime, she makes her way over to the team bench area and is giving a few words of encouragement to the team. The next thing I hear from all the way across the floor is, "Mom, you're not helping at all. Get out of here."
I was trying to take myself back to the other side
that
of that.
That was great.
That
is exactly what my daughter would say to either me or my wife if we were trying to inject ourselves into the team. You're not helping at all.
The girls were like, so you asked me to be assertive and be demonstrative and stuff.
No, you need to be assertive. That's part of the job.
Initially, I was skittish because I didn't want to be forceful. I was putting in perspective. If I had a daughter and I wouldn't want to be yelling at her, it's like, "Foul, you. But and then I got a sense from the parents that if I wasn't assertive with those calls, then they were just going to bash me. And really, the parents were really not that bad for the majority of those games. But as I started to get into a rhythm a little bit, I started to pick it up. But it was funny because there was maybe one or two girls that got a little pushy and stuff, but outside of that, the girls were fine. And
it's never the players.
And it took me back to...
At that level, it's never the players.
It's the parents and the coaches.
You nailed it.
Little back and forth between some of the coaches and some of the parents, but I found out, I just assumed I was volunteering. Apparently, I'm getting paid for my efforts, is awesome. Yeah. But you move on from that. It really wasn't
You'll
as bad.
You'll be retiring soon, I'm sure.
What I took at, it really wasn't as bad as I anticipated. I thought I was going to walk into the lion's den. But what I was told from some of the other staff members there is that it's not as bad because of COVID and stuff. Parents don't want to get thrown out.
Oh, no. So they don't let just anybody in either.
It's easier to yell when there's more people there.
So when I arrived, they said, "Well, who are you here for?" Because apparently you're only allowed in the gym if you have a kid playing. And I really threw them for a loop. "I'm here for the referees." And she looked up and said, "Huh?" I said, "You never heard that answer before, have you?" She said, "Frankly, no." And I explained what I was there to do, and she said, okay, right over here.
I did.
And so apparently, if you don't have a kid playing, you don't get in.
Yeah.
So.
It's, and he pointed at me, and she's like, oh, okay, it's okay. So I did look at the rule book prior to, and there's a couple weird rules, like you can't guard beyond the three-point line for first and second grade, can't be guard beyond half court, you can't go double. There's just a few little intricacies within their style of basketball that's not normal basketball. So I did have to kind of read up a little bit, but I was just surprised at how intense some of the coaches were. It's not necessarily yelling at me. I had several coaches say, hey, you did a good job first time or whatever. But they're like, they take this stuff intense. It was wild. And then there's like times when a coach, his team would be up 10 or 15. There'd be like a minute or 30 seconds left. And girls in first and second grade can't surmount that comeback, and they're asking me to call like double dribbles and travels when their team has been doing it the entire game. And I'm just like sitting there, I had a smile on my face the whole time. I didn't have to throw anyone out. Nothing really got forceful or anything. Did have a little bit of an altercation with one of the coaches, but it was, for the most part, it was pretty happy-go-lucky for the majority of Saturday.
Is this something you want to do again?
I will be in Nashville. I told them I will be in Nashville for the Vanderbilt Arkansas game this weekend, and it depends on how my schedule shakes out. But it was fun, and I consider it exercise.
That wasn't a hard yes.
So we'll see. That's probably the better phrase to use in this situation. We'll see. It's not completely nixing it out of my plans, but I'm not exactly moving and executing previous plans to get out.
You don't
of the
want
way.
Me to reserve you a spot at the officiating clinic this summer?
Yeah, I'm good. I don't think I need that for first grade basketball.
You don't have any aspirations all of a sudden to climb the ladder and
just doesn't appeal to me. So I will say that if I graded out on
Saturday,
you want
to be one of the good guys.
I would definitely be one of the good guys that graded out.
According to who?
The parents and the coaches. That gave me,
well, that's not who gets to do the grading.
Well, the fellow officials and the fellow staff members also said I did a good job. So there's a lot of people that said I did a fine job on Saturday.
Subscribe to the Hit That Line Podcast Network, the best podcast in the Natty State. Just search Hit That Line wherever you listen to podcasts.